This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to the Weekly Hotwire. This week on the show, I'm talking with Frank McLerner. Frank is director of the CLEAR Center at UC Davis in California, which is undertaking a lot of research into technologies and farming practices that can reduce methane emissions. But Frank also travels the world explaining the difference between short and long-lived gases. For example, he has spoken to the European Commission and Irish Parliament Agriculture Select Committee about methane. Frank joins me now. Hello, Frank. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell me a bit about yourself and the work that you do?
Yes, I work at the University of California in Davis. That's smack between San Francisco and Sacramento. I'm a professor there and an air quality specialist, and so I study the impact animals have, livestock has, on the air environment. And that includes not just air pollutants, but also things such as greenhouse gases leading to climate change. And I particularly focus on ways to minimize those impacts.
Fantastic. So today we are talking methane, and in particular, methane from livestock. Can you explain a bit about methane and its relevance to farming?
Yeah, methane is a unique gas insofar that it's produced under very specific conditions. Okay, so the methane-forming microbes do not tolerate any oxygen around them. And so you would find methane-forming microbes in the guts of cattle and other ruminants. You also find them in rice paddies and in landfills and so on. And these microbes produce this very powerful greenhouse gas. It's about 28 times more powerful per molecule to warm our planet compared to carbon dioxide. So that's what makes methane unique. What also makes it unique is that methane is not just produced by various sources, such as cattle, landfills, rice paddies, but methane is also destroyed. And that happens in a relatively short time period. So it's a potent greenhouse gas, has a good punch to it, but it has a short lifespan.
Okay, so it has a short lifespan. How long does it last in the atmosphere?
About a decade, a little over a decade. And to contrast that to CO2, carbon dioxide, has a lifespan of over 1,000 years. So methane has a greater punch in trapping heat from the sun, but a short lifespan. And that's making a big difference in how it warms the planet.
In regard to warming, how does methane differ from, say, CO2?
So CO2 is largely a result of burning oil, coal, gas, the so-called fossil fuels. Every time we burn, let's say, gasoline with our cars, we add additional warming to our planet. The same is not true for methane. Methane is not just produced, but it's also destroyed by a process called oxidation. Okay, and if we have a constant source of methane, let's say a constant cattle herd, then the methane that's produced by those constant numbers of animals and the methane that's destroyed through this process called oxidation is roughly in balance. And that means if you have a constant source of methane, you're not adding additional warming to our planet. But if you produce any kind of CO2, whether it's low, medium, high, you always add additional warming. And here's what's special about methane too. If you increase methane over time, then you increase a lot of additional warming. You produce a lot of additional warming. But here's the encouraging thing. If you reduce methane, then you reduce warming because then you replenish less methane than is naturally destroyed. And that means when methane goes down in the air, warming goes down. And the same is not true for the other greenhouse gases. And that gives us a really good opportunity in animal agriculture to manage this gas and by doing so help reduce in the fight for changing climate.
So if they're so different in terms of warming, which, you know, for us here in New Zealand in particular, and farming, why are they being measured in the same way?
In my opinion, they shouldn't be qualified in the same way because they are just very different pollutants. CO2, as I said, is produced and not really destroyed by anything. Its lifespan is pretty much forever. If we want to halt additional climate change, we need to reduce CO2 emissions down to zero. Because of the unique nature of methane, we don't have to reduce that gas down to zero, but we have to have meaningful reductions of, let's say, 20-30% over a longer period of time. And that equates to 0.3% annually. If we reduce 0.3% methane per year, then the sector doing that, producing that gas, will not add to additional warming. And so methane can be managed very differently from other greenhouse gases, but we will have a good outcome when doing so. We don't want to ignore it. Don't get me wrong, okay? I by no means say we can let go of managing methane. We shall manage methane because when we do, we will make a difference.
What percentage does methane account for in total emissions?
That totally depends on the scale that we are talking globally or in a country like the United States or New Zealand. These numbers are very different. In a place like California, where I live, methane from livestock is responsible maybe for 5% or so of total emissions of the state of California. In New Zealand, it's much more because you have fewer other industries, and agriculture is such an important part of what you do as a nation. And so, and because the animal agricultural part is so important, and here in particular, dairy, sheep, and beef cattle production, and because methane is their main emitted gas, that whole question of how much and how to mitigate becomes really center stage in this country.
So if we're targeting methane, and it appears certainly to me that the warming or impact from methane has been significantly overstated, what are some mitigation techniques or technologies being used to reduce agricultural emissions, and what could this mean for grass-based systems?
So again, the answer depends on the locality that we're talking about. Okay, so in California, we have intensive dairies, and we pretty much bring the feed to the animals, which are in barns, and the manure from those cows is flushed into lagoons where the manure is stored. Now, that's different from New Zealand, where your cows are largely on pasture. Under our conditions, the majority of methane comes from the manure storages. And we cover those manure storages, we trap the resulting methane, and we make the methane into transportation fuels. And they then run buses and heavy-duty trucks and so on instead of diesel doing so. Here in New Zealand, that would have a very limited utility. Here, where the majority of methane comes from grazing animals, it is other approaches that are likely being used, namely genetics is one. We know that methane is a heritable trait. The mama cow or mama sheep passes it on to its calf or lamb. And there are now tests developed that can tell you which of your animals is a high versus low methane producing animal. And once you select genetically in your breeding program for low methane producing animals, you will have a permanent solution to the issue. So that's a very promising approach. Another one studied here in New Zealand is vaccinations. A third one is the use of what's called a bolus, which is a capsule that you put into the rumen of these animals, slowly releasing an active ingredient that reduces enteric methane. That's the methane belched out of the front end of the cow. In addition to those approaches, there are some others, but I would say these are maybe the three main approaches. There might also be some range considerations, such as improved forages to those that contain more fat. That would have an impact on enteric methane. And to those dairies, let's say, that are more intensive, that do have manure storages, there might also be anaerobic digesters where you trap the manure and the resulting gases, and you convert the gases into either power, and you power houses and so on, or you convert it into fuels. And that is possible even from smaller operations if several smaller dairies pool their manure and put it into centralized facilities, then the so-called hub and spokes approach might work as well.
It's really interesting. You touched a bit on California. Can you talk to a recent experience in California in reducing methane emissions from the dairy sector using grants and carbon credits and not pricing? And secondly, how could this work in New Zealand?
Yeah, so we are using a different approach in California compared to most of the rest of the world. Most of the rest of the world uses what I call the cane approach. Here in New Zealand, you might call it the stick approach of using rules and regulations, fines, and/or taxes, where you, as a government, say, we want you, the farmer, to reduce emissions. If you don't, then we price you in some way. We tax you in some way. That is an approach that I have observed in my international travels as not being very well liked, as you can imagine, by farmers, and oftentimes strongly opposed and not being very effective. In California, our legislature did something that I found being a departure of what they did before, namely to replace the cane approach with a carrot approach. And what they call it is a so-called voluntary incentive-based approach, where the farmer is told, we expect you to reduce emissions, but you choose which technologies or approaches you want to use. As long as you get to the target, we are fine with how you get there. And instead of penalizing you if you don't do it, we incentivize you to do it. We pay you to reduce emissions. And that's not a subsidized way of doing business, but it is much like the government telling you if you have a normal car and you change it to an electric car, then you get a tax rebate. Or if you put solar panels on your house, you get a tax rebate to putting those things on your house. Where the government incentivizes citizens to change behaviors financially. Now, that's what's happening in California. We have an overall system, what's called cap and trade, where large industries that cannot reduce emissions, like steel industry and others, have to pay into an account, and other industries that can reduce emissions get paid from that account. And so dairies, for example, that reduce emissions, let's say through the use of digesters, and that convert the biogas that comes from the manure storages into fuels and/or power, those get paid a what's called low carbon fuel standard credit. And that credit can amount to a sizable amount of money. And that's what triggered a large amount of our dairy industry, which by far is the number one in the United States by means of size and importance. We produce 20% of US milk in California. And in 5 years from now, half of all cows in California will produce not just manure, but produce manure that will then produce biogas that will then be marketed and be made into fuels and/or power. And the farmers are making money by doing so. And that is the trick. The rule, the law, I should say, not a rule, but the law says that our farmers and all methane producing sectors must reduce methane by 40%, 40, by the year 2030. And because of this voluntary incentive-based approach that has been implemented years ago, our farmers are well on their way to achieving that goal. The 40% reduction amounts to about 7 million metric tons of methane that needs to be reduced, 7 million metric tons of CO2e. So far, our dairy industry is at 5 million. So 7 million is the goal. So far, they're at 5 million reduction. And that means they're well on their way to achieving the world's most aggressive methane law there is. And that is done by the government working with rather than against our farmers.
Fascinating. It sounds like we're missing a bit of a trick here in New Zealand. What are other countries, for example, in like Europe and Ireland and the UK and places doing to reduce their methane emissions from agriculture?
I think many other countries are not as far as New Zealand. Okay, New Zealand is further because the significance of the topic is much greater here, because your livestock sector is so important as part of the total economy. So other governments, other agencies, and other governments in other localities are not as well informed as yours is. So, for example, the so-called split gas approach that New Mexico, that New Zealand has, is pretty unique. It's also followed by California, but there are a few other places in the world. Uruguay is one, but the others are all mixing everything up, and that muddies the waters. I think the rest of the world will look at places like New Zealand, places like California, to see how they shall treat methane. The question that New Zealand has to answer is, what will the approach be by which we get our farmers to reach the goals that our country has? Will we use this tax approach or some fines, or will we use incentives, or how will we do it? Will there be some cap and trade system like California has, or will there be some other way of financial carrot or stick to get farmers to where we want to go? I have seen very clearly over the last few years, I've done a lot of international travel. I've seen very clearly that the one approach, the stick approach, is much, much less effective than the carrot approach.
And you touched a bit on regulation. What regulatory frameworks may be needed to approve some of these technologies that you've been talking about?
I don't really think that a lot of regulatory action is needed. Of course, one has to make sure that if a technology is used, let's say like a feed additive, that a technology like that will not affect the healthfulness and nutrition of the products we produce. I mean, obviously, you don't want to feed something to cows that affects milk or meat. So the safety has to be considered, and other environmental potential impacts have to be considered as well. But I do feel that that's being done here in New Zealand. I see a lot of research, much of which is world leading, is conducted by Ag Research, by AgriZero, and so on, by other initiatives here in New Zealand. I think that's very important, that research and policy development really goes hand in hand along with industry to look at not just the intended, but also unintended consequences, because we don't want to make mistakes that we then dearly have to pay the price for later.
Now, carbon. What about livestock? Can livestock be part of the solution in terms of carbon rather than the promoted problem that we hear a lot about?
Well, the answer I have to that is a very clear yes, but I would say not livestock is the solution, but the management of methane is the solution. Okay, this might sound like just some verbiage trick, but it's not. If you manage this particular gas in so far that you reduce it, then you have a short-term warming impact, namely a good impact, a positive warming. You reduce warming. And how can livestock be part of that solution? Simply by better breeding, better feeding, better manure management, some technologies that we hadn't even thought of 5 years ago that are now available. We just need to be creative, and we need to use the best approaches through management, through technology, through breeding, and so on. And it will help our farmers reduce emissions, and that will reduce warming.
Frank, I've really enjoyed chatting with you today. Thank you so much for your time.
You're most welcome, Angus. Thank you for having me.
Interesting stuff, and what is clear from Frank's work is that we need to rethink methane. Methane is short-lived, warming for 12 years before it is naturally removed. If emissions are stable for 12 years, what is being emitted roughly equals what is naturally destroyed. The balance means no additional warming. So, according to Frank, it's all about warming, and how we currently measure methane doesn't factor in the natural removal of methane. And the impact of methane's warming is overestimated by a factor of 3 to 4, according to the latest IPCC report. He says cattle sectors can be climate neutral by 2044, with 18 to 32% in methane reductions. But business as usual won't cut it and will require development and adoption of new innovations, such as feed additives and developing low methane emitting breeding strategies. We must continue with innovations such as dairy digesters, which alone have reduced 30% of California's methane reduction goals. Also, dairy digesters are a cost-effective way of reducing methane from manure, Frank says. Dairy digesters have reduced 30% of the greenhouse gases through a California Climate Investment Initiative, with less than 2% of state funding. There is a lot we can learn from what is being achieved in California. We simply have to get this right. For a country like ours, we need to get this right. Our farming industry is too important not to. A pathway forward is becoming clearer. The tools are becoming available. And as I've been saying for years, and as Frank just said, the stick approach doesn't work. The carrot approach, however, is having a significant and positive impact in California with fantastic results. You can read more about Frank and his work. Just head along to clear.ucdavis.edu to find out more. Well, that's all for me this week. Thank you for listening and catch you next time.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.